Hey, kids, we're a couple of annoying grunt boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast. That's right, we're the podcast that explores the show The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond. Why 11 and beyond, you ask? Well, we know that there are plenty of other shows out there that explore the golden age of Simpsons, seasons 1 through 10, or 2 through 8, depending on who you ask. But we want to explore the forgotten episodes, the newer episodes, the maligned episodes. Is there gold in them there episodes? Well, we'll find it if there is. And if nothing else, we'll talk about it. But I can't talk to myself because I'm not a crazy person. But if you are, that's okay. I'm half an annoyed grunt boy, Steve. And with me, as always...
Damn it, the flame scored again.
Oh, no.
Oh, sorry. Half annoyed grunt boy Craig.
And to be clear, you're talking about the hockey team, the Flames.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't be watching hockey while we're recording a podcast, right?
I mean, it's quite all right. I mean, hockey is very exciting. We're both fans.
All right. Well, I'll try to not pay attention.
Though I am in the market for a new team because I had a team that I enjoyed, but their owner bought Neverland Ranch. That seems wrong.
Didn't they support our former president?
They did, and they also asked for a small business loan, and they got $14 million.
That's just a small business loan.
Yeah, and I know that hockey is the most profitable of sports, but still, seems gross.
And it's not like the Pittsburgh Penguins, your former favorite team, like have a fan base and make money off of them at all.
Yeah, it's not like they're kind of like the Yankees of hockey, just kind of buying team players. So, I mean, obviously, I want to go for the Kraken because, you know, they're local. And I also like the Golden Knights because, you know, they got Marc-Andre Fleury, who's a great goalie.
And it's Vegas, baby.
That's right. But I think the team that I'm going to go with, this is a hill turn for me, and it feels weird.
I'm going to guess real quick. Ready?
Okay.
You're going to go for a fan of the podcast, Timothy. He lives in Minnesota, so the Minnesota Wild.
Ooh, I am not going to go for the Wild. I do appreciate that they are Wild and they have an awful uniform, but right.
I'll do it again.
Okay.
Now, full disclosure, I'm a Vancouver Canucks fan, and the way they're playing this season in the bubble, it's all Canadian teams are playing each other, so they're none of the American teams are playing the Canadian, vice versa. So I'm going to say you're going to be on my side, Steve. I think you're going to the Great White North, and your team is going to be a Canadian team. And I'm going to say your team is going to be the Montreal Canadiens.
Oh, I thought about going for a classic Canadian team.
The Habs.
But I just can't get on board with any of the teams. I mean, they're fine. So my team, my new team, and I'm very excited because I know that our listeners have always known about my deep love of hockey because we've talked about it so much.
Do we need a drum roll?
Perhaps.
All right. Whoever our editor is, insert a drum roll, please.
That's right, Craig. I'm doing a gritty reboot, you can say. Because my team is.
No.
It is.
You're not going to be a Flyers fan, are you?
I sure am.
You were a Penguins fan and then going to the Flyers. That's like literally you break up with your wife and you marry her ex-husband.
Exactly. Well, I just realized like in the 90s or in early 2000s when I'd play NHL Faceoff on the PlayStation 1, when I wasn't playing the Penguins, my backup team, always the Flyers.
All right. It's always sunny with the Flyers, Steve.
That's right.
All right. I'll allow it. Until then, you have a year before we're cracking files.
Yes. And then we'll crack down on Seattle's own team.
I mean, I'm still going to be a Canucks fan. I know there's going to be a rivalry between Seattle and Vancouver. I'll probably go to games with be one of those weirdos that cuts up two jerseys and sews them together with both teams.
It's a nice message of unity, though.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's more of a we should respect our neighbors to the north, right?
Yeah, because they're handling things better than we do.
Right. Hey, happy one day of President Biden, right?
It's a whole new world.
Do you remember when Obama, like the day after he was like elected, or like even when he the inauguration, you felt like times have changed? You're like, it feels like there's something in the air that feels a lot better. Nothing will ever go wrong after George W. Bush. I still feel like shit, though.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I do have, and I forgive the phrasing, I do have hope. But yeah, it's still, everything's still awful.
Yeah. But Steve, like many celebrities told us like 5 years ago on YouTube, it gets better.
It does get better. Now, if only they can get on Twitter and sing another song poorly, I'll feel a lot better about the world that we live in.
All right. Well, we still have another 4 years with Biden in the office. God, things won't get any better, Steve.
Oh, boy.
We just need to get a Republican back in there and clean this up.
Not a political podcast and also not true.
What kind of podcast is this then?
I believe that this is a Simpsons podcast.
Maybe we should watch a Simpsons episode.
Why don't we watch the Regina Monologues? In fact, that episode aired on November 23rd, 2003. Craig, what was the number one movie in the box office at that time?
Everyone's favorite Mike Myers film.
Shrek?
No, Cat in the Hat.
Oh, Cat in the Hat, yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that movie?
Nah.
If you ever won like a fever dream, that's actually kind of fun. It's weird.
Would that be a good edibles film?
Absolutely. It's some fun trivia about it. He was supposed to make a Sprockets movie, and there was something jumbled up with the contract in the studios. And so he did this as a revenge when it fell through. And so this is kind of a fuck you movie. And when you watch it, you can see that.
Maybe I want to watch it now.
I do suggest being not sober.
Okay. Hey, what were we a bopping to?
Well, Craig, the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 was Baby Boy by Beyonce featuring Sean Paul. Beyonce, sing it now.
Steve, have you ever heard this song before?
I sure have.
You have someone that you live with that listens to Beyonce?
Yes, my lovely wife, Laura.
My wife.
Is she stands Beyonce? Is that what the kids say?
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a good song. Sean Paul, you know, with that, you know, kind of reggae beat to the lovely voice of Beyonce. You know, it's a nice pop song.
Yeah, very fun.
Yeah.
Anyways, what's this episode again?
So it's called The Regina Monologues. Prime Minister Tony Blair welcomes The Simpsons to England, or they run into author J.K. Rowling, uh-oh, and Ian McKellen, even more uh-oh.
Hey, let's take a little well-earned break.
Yes.
For this five-minute intro, and come back and discuss The Vagina Monologues parody, Regina Monologues.
Sounds great. We'll be right back. I know you're gonna like it. I'm stepping up. And we're back. Today we're talking about The Regina Monologues, the fourth episode of the 15th season. It originally aired on November 23rd, 2003. It is episode 317 in the show's run. Your nerd code is EABF22. It was written by John Swartzwelder, directed by Mark Kirkland, and your showrunner is Al Jean.
All right, John Swartzwelder.
Hmm.
We only get to review a few of his episodes.
And this one is the last.
I would say he's the probably one of the most controversial Simpsons writers, besides his like personal political beliefs. But
yeah.
As in, he wrote You Only Move Twice, which is probably regarded as like the number one Simpsons episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also wrote, even though we liked it, Kill the Alligator and Run, the one in Florida. He also wrote The Simpsons Safari, which are two episodes that are kind of controversial in the fandom. We have reviewed both of those, and we found that Kill the Alligator Run is actually more fun than we thought.
Yeah, it was one of our more favorable episodes, honestly.
And Simpsons Safari, yeah, we didn't like that one as much.
No.
When they were pitching ideas, did they just say, all right, well, whenever we do the Simpsons are going to episode, just give it to John?
Yeah, I think so. I'm just like, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah. He's been quoted as being either a libertarian or some call him a hardcore conservative. He's
yeah.
Gun rights advocate. And here's a really funny story that David Cohen once said about him, that even though he had wrote many of the environmentally driven episodes, he has been described as an anti-environmentalist. And so David Cohen once told a story about Schwarzweiler going on an extended diatribe about how there is more rainforest on Earth now than there was 100 years ago. I mean, we love his writing. You speak highly about his books.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. You know, they can be, I mean, maybe a little problematic, but not super bad. Just, you know, he's of a different time, I feel.
It reminds me of the episode where Lisa and Bart want to write Itchy and Scratchy, and so they get Grandpa. John didn't write that episode, did he?
I don't think so, but that is definitely kind of... I
wonder if that was, like, the inspiration. Like, he's like Abe Simpson. I mean, Cartridge Family, the one with the gun, that Homer gets a gun. He wrote that. I know that, isn't that episode kind of like some fans like it, some don't? Because I actually like that episode.
I think it's a good episode, yeah.
Gosh, just he has 59 episodes. So that's just, I mean, it's fun to go and you know, watch the Schwartzwelder episodes. They're some of my favorite.
You can't talk about the history of The Simpsons without talking about what a big impact he had on it. And one of my favorite things is in the commentary for one of the episodes, the cast and, like, you know, the people on the commentary are like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to finally call him. And they call him up and, like, somebody picks up the phone and talks to him for a minute. And they're like, okay, John, tell me all about this. And he's like, well, it's too bad this isn't John Schwartzwelder. And then hangs up. And I don't know if it was actually him or not, but it probably was.
Well, luckily, Steve, on this podcast, we get all the guests. So joining us on this Zoom meeting, we got John Schwartzwelder. John, how are we doing?
This is John.
What was it like being in the Beatles?
It was great. I'm not a good person, though. I beat my first wife. Probably beat Yoko, too.
Did you say you eat your first wife?
Yep, and I ate the mess she left, too.
Well, in Schwartzwelder, we trust, right, Steve?
That's right.
This is the Regina Monologues.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pun of Eve Ensler's play, The Vagina Monologues.
Ooh.
Did you know Regina is substituted as the Latin word for queen?
Oh, interesting.
So the city in Canada, Regina, Saskatchewan, is that where it's at?
I believe so, yes.
The city that rhymes with fun.
Mm-hmm.
So Regina Spector, musician, really just Queen Spector.
And that's funny because a specter is like the thing that they hold.
And Spector's like that movie with James Bond.
That's right.
You know, in that movie, like before they had the singer for who did the Spector theme song, I forget. I think it was like Sam Smith. I'm like, come on, get Regina Spector to do a Bond theme.
Just makes sense.
I know. Anyways, and like we said before, this was John last episode he wrote for The Simpsons, except for he did contribute to the movie.
That's right. 4 years later. So we started out with a couch gag. And so behind the Simpsons sofa is a play annoyed grunt or dough, Play-Doh fun factory that poops out dough that creates Play-Doh's versions of the family with Homer as yellow dough, Marge orange, Lisa green, Maggie red, and Bart is pink.
We have this one before?
I feel like we have, yeah.
Or maybe they did a variation.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they would have done it before. Maybe because I said so.
Maybe you did, yeah.
Yeah. So the episode proper begins, Steve. We get Mr. Burns and Smithers just walking down the old street, Steve.
That's right.
They see some vendor selling some peanuts, or as Burns calls them, crackleberries.
Mm.
I like that term.
Yeah, I think that's a good term.
Burns asked his faithful assistant to lend him some money so he can put nuts in his mouth.
Your nuts in my face.
Thanks, Skinner, for that. He asks Smithers for some money, but Smithers replies that he's already spotted him over $100,000 this year alone and suggests that that billionaire should carry his own money. But as Burns points out, money is for the poor. That line. It just pisses me off because I just thought, like, instantly, like, it's funny because it's true.
Yeah.
Don't you hate it when, like, celebrities who have money to buy cars and stuff like that, like, the company sends rich people free things to try so they can get us plebs to buy it.
Exactly. And so they can be seen driving around in their car and just like, ah.
It's just like that Porsche that we drive. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you would think our Porsche that we got, the gas mileage would be terrible, but it's been really good.
I know. And you would think that the Porsche with its stylish body would be tight to fit in, but it's really roomy inside.
I know. For someone with long legs like you, that Porsche is perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, with somebody who has like a lot of tennis gear and stuff to carry like you, the trunk is so spacious.
I just got to say, this Porsche is probably the best car you could ever buy.
It's the only 911 I'll remember.
So Mr. Burns tells him to use his go to the bank and use the ATM. So Smithers helps out Montgomery Burns with the automatic teller machine.
That's right.
Ah, yes. The automated teller machine, Eola Trollomaton. Oh, Smithers, guide me in.
My pleasure, sir.
Smithers, what's my password?
It's your age, sir.
Excellent. Let's see. What's the smallest amount of money I can think of? $1,000. Oh, my moolah.
So could you tell on the keypad what his age was?
One internet person said 0420, which, you know, would be 420, but it's stupid. It looks like when he dials it in, he goes for middle row, top row, middle, bottom.
So he has at least four digits in his age.
Yes. It's possible that the first or second digit are zero and or the first or second. So he's not over 1,000 years old. So in other ages, like in Simpson and Delilah, he was stated as 81. In Who Shot Mr. Burns, he was Homer and Smithers, and Hunka Hunka Burns in Love, he is stated to be 104. In Broadcast News, they put him at 123 years old, and in the comics, he's 118. So hard to say.
I wouldn't count the comics. Those aren't canon.
No. The most episodes claim him to be 104. So let's go with that. So it could be 0104.
All right, I'll go with that.
Yeah, but that means he has to change his PIN every year.
How do you even change your PIN?
I have not been to an ATM, and I don't remember the last time I was at an ATM.
Yeah.
So the $1,000 bill knocks Burns on his little butt and then goes soaring into the air of Springfield, floating towards where? 742 Evergreen Terrace. Inside, Bart and Milhouse are duking it out as Mr. Shadowski and Mr. O'Bannon in the rollicking video game Hockey Dad. As Bart's avatar ignores his son, his charges go from assault to murder, and he's declared a big man as the cops take him away.
I would totally play the HE double hockey sticks out of that game.
Very nice. That sounds like a fun game.
It should just be like a whole sports like franchise game where you just like bleach your parent game, so you could play the hockey, the baseball, basketball, all the sports.
Yeah,
where it'd be a fun strategy game, maybe like an online game where you're competing with other parents. Mm-hmm. So like you're selected, you're given a child at random when you start the game. So you're like, okay, you have to follow number three. Mm-hmm. And so the computer will like, oh, even better, like the ump or the ref should also be a player and have to mm-hmm. make the calls. So
and you have to react to that.
Yeah. And then you get into fights, and like it comes down to like it, you know, it'll pick which one like to actually instigate fights. So then like you're in a group of like, you know, a bunch of people watching this game. And they're like, okay, it likes Steve's player versus Craig's player. Then we have to fight it out. I'm thinking too much into this, Steve. I'm not a video game developer. Yeah.
No, but I like the idea of like, you know, you're playing soccer and like you have to like throw orange slices at your opponent. Yeah.
And then, because there's a game, there's a Friday the 13th game, and there's also a Predator game that you could play online. For instance, like Friday 13th, you could play as one of the kids in the campground. And then one player that's in the same server is Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And it rotates too. So sometimes you get to be Jason. So it would be like
that would be a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. And there's a Predator version too, where you're like a commando and then another person is at random the Predator. And they're really fun. I think Friday 13th, I like that a little bit more than the Predator.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really fun. And it's hard to actually escape. But every time I was always Jason, everyone I was escaped because I was really bad at it.
I would be too, I think.
It's kind of tough. Anyways, that's how you could do it. It just generates like you get to be the ump and make the bad decisions. Maybe put coaches in there. I don't know.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. I don't know if this is intentional or not, but the line "Feel the drunken rage of Chuck Shadowski" in the game is a reference to Big Chuck Shadowski, a Cleveland TV personality and host of the Big Chuck and Little John show. Although I don't think it's that Little John.
Maybe it's something Schwarzwelder knows that we don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not from Cleveland.
No, Schwarzwelder's from Seattle, so I don't know.
Hmm.
Back to the Simpsons, Steve. Bart takes his eye off the hockey game there, and for a moment, he's seeing some floating currency glide through the air, and it lands in Milhouse's hair. So Bart tells Milhouse that there's a ladybug, and he's got to remove it, but Milhouse is worried, scared because there's a ladybug on his head, Steve.
Yikes.
So he removes that ladybug, aka the money. Milhouse tells Bart he's a good friend, and Bart replies that he's the best he'll ever have. So then at the kitchen table, the Simpsons contemplate what to do with their newfound $1,000 bill.
$1,000. Do you know how much furniture we could rent with this?
You rent nothing. This money is mine. I found it.
Which means someone lost it. You'll have to put up flyers and see if anyone claims it.
Marge. This is why people don't tell you things.
So this is actually a reference to the Brady Bunch, because there's an episode called The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, where I think Peter finds money or something, and Maureen McCormick tells him to put a flyer up, and he's like, oh, man.
I don't remember that episode. Is that the one where they're lost in the Grand Canyon?
Or no, it's the one where they're in Hawaii.
Yeah. I think it's like the only two episodes I've seen. Because they're like, there were three episodes back to back, weren't they? Or not back to back, but.
They were really long.
I know. I swear, I've always seen the, like, if it's on TV, all of a sudden, like, Brady Bunch is on, and it's always either they're in Hawaii or they're in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Maybe they did like a whole season where they were just in the Grand Canyon.
Could be. I like the one with Ben Stiller's wife. Those are my favorite.
I think those are the movies, Steve.
Oh, okay. Well, those are better than that.
And I don't think they're married anymore.
Oh.
Yeah. He's now married to Eve Plume. Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
Eve Plume, she was Jan Brady in the original.
Yeah.
In the original Brady Bunch. I don't even know who played Jan in the movie. I think it's someone, she still works too. She was, I forget the actress's name, but I think she was in Web Therapy, maybe? The Lisa Kudrow show?
Yeah, that sounds right. Jennifer Elise Cox.
Is that who that is?
Yeah. She was in the Brady Bunch. She was in Jesus Christ, or Jesus People, the movie. Santa Paws 2, the Santa Pups. Oh, she also played Jan Brady in an episode of Wings.
Hey, she's in one episode of It's Always Sunny.
She was also in an episode of Moesha where she played Jan Brady.
That's so weird. So she was like the new Jan Brady of the 90s.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, she was on Web Therapy. I watched that show. It was fun.
Oh, nice. And then an episode of Two Broke Girls and yeah.
Steve, you'd like this. She's in this TV series Where the Bears Are.
Ooh.
Playing Jan Brady. No. Anyways, what are we talking about?
Oh, anyway. So yeah, Marge tells him to put up a poster. So Bart and Homer hang a sign that reads $1,000 bill found, call KL5-6587, and they put it on the top of an electrical pole. And as they laugh at their ingenuity, Otto and Sideshow Mel walk by and see the sign. And it made me wonder, like, what were Sideshow Mel and Otto doing hanging out?
I'm probably smoking weed.
That's what I assumed. They're curious what the flyer says. And Mel's especially concerned if it's for guitar lessons. So Otto uses his school bus to back into the electrical pole. And with Bart and Homer still hanging on. And as they fall, Homer tells Bart to land on his back. And so back at the Simpsons home, a line has formed around the block full of people looking to claim the lost money.
Can you describe the bill?
Describe? Sure, of course.
Whose picture's on it?
It would have to be somebody famous. I'm gonna say Hitler.
Next.
Does the bill have bank teller blood on it?
No, it doesn't.
I'm sorry I wasted your time.
That's the last of them. You did the right thing, Bart. And now you can keep the money.
Sweet. What am I gonna do with $1,000?
It's Bart's moon party from outer space with R2-D2 playing the bass.
No one's touching the hors d'oeuvres.
It's Bart's moon party from outer space. But what?
Bart? Why don't you spend the money on something for Mom? She does so much for us.
Well, someday I'd like to go on a nice vacation.
So much to unpack from that clip.
Yeah, in the beginning, I really loved Moe's line reading. Somebody famous. Hitler.
It seemed like an obvious joke, but it worked so well.
Yeah, I also like the snake being so polite.
Right. So you get, Mo trying to get the $1,000, but the one person you assume that would just be like, it's mine, and just like point a gun and take it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he only hates bank tellers and Apu.
Yeah.
And Homer if he has his hair.
Yeah.
But that's not
then
canon.
There'll be hair held to pay.
Yeah. And then the Bart's moon base, which is fun because I love the line R2-D2 playing bass. That's cute.
Mm-hmm. And this is the image of it.
But the end, when Bart's like, why is no one touching my hors d'oeuvres? And then the absurdity of Homer, like, singing the song.
Right, because he heard it somehow.
That seems...
That's really good.
Connected with, Mo and Snake. That's great. All right, so Homer responds saying that they've gone on plenty of vacations, but Marge wants to go where they don't get kidnapped or be part of a chain gang. And then she remembers their honeymoon, and a photo shows a pregnant Marge looking worried as Homer is tied to a wrecking ball that's about to hit a building. And she doesn't want her son to waste his money on her, so she steps away. But Bart tells Lisa that she's a great lady.
So the next day at school, Bart is showing off his found $1,000 bill to his school chums. Milhouse is impressed by the cross-hatching of Grover Cleveland's tie and its ability to create the illusion of shadow. Nelson figures that the bill must be worth like $1 million. And then a timer goes off and the showing of the money is over, but the kids all want to look at it a little bit more. Milhouse offers a quarter to look longer, which gives Bart an idea, which kind of reminds me of the trampoline episode.
Yeah, I thought he's going to make a sign that says, stay off lawn, stay off trampoline.
So a little bit of trivia for you, Craig. The standard value of a lightly circulated $1,000 bill is typically worth about $1,600.
Okay.
So they used to exist. They stopped around the 1968-1969. And, you know, a mint one might be worth up to like $5,000. But for one that was like, you know, kind of used, it's about worth $1,600.
Thanks for your money trivia.
I know that's why people turn in.
As a Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn would say, your money, baby.
Join me next week on Susie Orman's podcast, where we talk more about money.
Baby.
Baby.
All right. Well, Bart has turned his treehouse into a museum of modern Bart, where for a mission, you can see the $1,000 bill for $5, of course, Steve.
Yeah.
So the civil Springfieldians stare in awe at the discontinued currency. And we got a little fun cameo by Grandpa playing the security guard. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. And to pad out the exhibition, Bart is showing Bart the early years with his skateboard, lucky red cap, 200th episode t-shirt, and his trademark slingshot under glass. Since he's charging $5 to get in, people deserve to see the boy behind the bill.
So the 200th episode is a reference to Trash of the Titans, which was the 200th episode with Steve Martin and Homer becoming the trash guy.
Yeah. Do we get to review that?
I think not.
I think not then.
Too bad, because U2's in that too.
You too?
And me too. So Lisa tells Bart that another exhibit is biased, insensitive, and anti-feminist. And the exhibit in question is titled The Birth of Lisa, A Simpson Too Many, featuring Lisa's diary, some toy blocks that spell out sacks, and a photograph of young Bart dumping an ice cream cone on crying Lisa. And if it weren't insulting enough to Lisa, it's got to make Maggie feel like shit, too. But as Bart says, you can't whitewash history.
Well, in the gift shop corner of the Treehouse Museum, there's several pieces of Museum of Modern Bart swag and even shirts that say I saw $1,000. Marge explains the benefits of becoming a friend of Bart. The possible rifle owner of the Cleveland Adorned Bill makes himself known.
Ooh. What do I get if I join the museum as a friend of Bart?
A subscription to Bart Forum magazine? And Bart will say, eat my shorts on your home answering machine.
How much to have Bart crank call me? Oh, that would be hilarious. Ah, that's just me, though, you know. I love to laugh.
Young men, I believe you have something that belongs to me.
Prove it, Boney Curtis.
When the errant bill struck my chest, it left a distinctive bruise. Had my heart been inside at the time, it could have been fatal.
It's a perfect match.
Yoink.
Without that bill, this ain't a museum. The Hard Rock Cafe in Phoenix has better crap.
I'm recycling this pin in disgust.
Does everyone just recycle those pins in disgust? Because there's a big pile of recycled pins.
Yeah, I don't know.
The only reason I have you on this podcast is for you to know.
Oh, well, sometimes, don't kick me off. Sometimes in museums, they give you pins or merchandise to wear to show that you bought a ticket.
You've talked enough.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You know what you get for that.
You're a real jerk, you know that?
You're right. I'm sorry, Penn Teller.
Kiss my balls.
Guys, if you don't know, I figured out the sound on Zoom, so we can have that soundboard again.
That's what she said.
Glacier Castles.
Do you like semen?
Boner. Suck, suck.
My sperm. Masturbate. Penis.
Bart, are you coming?
Like a rumba.
But Mommy wanted it.
All right.
That one's still my favorite, I think.
So back in the kitchen table, the family's enjoying some Marge's awful ice cream sundaes. Lisa discovers that Bart's museum made $3,000, which would mean 600 people bought tickets. Though we would have to account for the merchandise sales. Either way, it's impressive for a display of one rare bill from an ATM and a bunch of 10-year-old boys' memorabilia that would fetch that kind of attention. Anyways, but Bart can finally get what he has always wanted, a used Toyota. But Lisa suggests that he should really use the money to make their mom happy and take a nice vacation. But Bart agrees. But where to go, Steve?
Where to go?
Where to go?
Well, I'd like to return to Brazil, but I hear the monkey problem is even worse now. I want to go to England.
How come?
Back in 1944, I was stationed over there, and I met a beautiful girl. Edwina, my slowly opening flower. I'm shipping out in the morning. Won't you make this night memorable?
Anything for you, my brave Yank. Oh, I say. Ooh, nice.
Little did I know, I really was shipping out in the morning. I'll never forget you, Edwina. But I did. Until just now.
Grandpa, that's so romantic. We gotta go to England.
That sounds great. But only if your father promises to behave.
Marge, I'll be on my best behavior. You have my word as a gentleman and a lady. Now let's see, which rifle should I bring?
It's weird that we're watching this episode, and last week they went to Iceland, they're doing the England thing and the Wheel of Random, but there was that same joke that Homer made last week where he could only pack one of his guitars to Iceland, but now he's going to pack one of his
rifles.
I think that's funny.
Also, you know, a nice reference to the Brazil episode,
which we did review, but you will never hear it.
That's right. And it's probably for the best.
Steve lost the audio.
Yep. I fucked up.
But it is probably for the best because when we eventually get to it, the quality will be a little bit better.
Yeah, at least the sound quality. The content quality will still be what you're hearing now.
Yeah, technically that would have been our very first episode.
That's right.
You know, so funny too about this is Lisa makes the point of like, do what mom wants, do what Marge wants.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to just grandpa, like, I always want to go to England. And they're like, all right.
Yeah,
so like they don't maybe really get to what Marge wants to do. Go
right.
Education. I think that was kind of fun.
Yeah, maybe she wanted to go to
Iceland?
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, they can't go to Australia.
No. Could go to Thailand.
Yeah. Well, eventually Marge gets her way and she gets to go to Portland.
That's true.
To be a lumber Jill.
That's right. Yeah. In our episode, Marge's Lumber Jill. So our second act does begin in jolly old England, where several Mary Poppins, or maybe Sherry Bobbins, are in the sky floating via umbrella as her theme plays in the background. The Simpsons land at Heathrow Airport, where they meet the first of many Britons.
Hello. Welcome to the United Kingdom.
Prime Minister Tony Blair?
Why are you greeting lowlifes like us at the airport?
Because I want to encourage all the world to come see the beauty of 21st century Britain.
Would an American dollar encourage you to leave us alone?
No, but thank you.
Tony, I mean Mr. Prime Minister, what should we see first?
There's so much to see here. Parliament, Stratford-on-Avon, the White Cliffs of Dover. Oh, and you Americans love castles. There's a huge one in Edinburgh, the city where I was born.
The place I was born is now a gator farm.
Smashing.
Maybe you could give us a personal tour of your country.
I'd love to, but I'm late for an appointment. I'm greeting a lovely Dutch couple at gate 23. Cheerio.
Wow, I can't believe we met Mr. Bean.
Tony Blair, people liked him, but then they didn't, right?
Yeah.
What did he do wrong again?
It's kind of funny because, you know, we compare Boris Johnson and Donald Trump a lot. He was kind of considered, you know, their George W. Bush, because he also at first was against Iraq war and then kind of bended and, you know, went along with us while we killed some people. Not a political podcast.
And now we hate him.
But yeah, I think so.
I mean, we're not under the king's rule, so Tony, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, we live in a free place that's not a monarchy.
Yeah, we live in an empire.
That's right.
Or a dictatorship. It's more like it.
Yeah, well, hopefully the week after this I will spill.
Well, no, this is the week. This is the day after the inauguration, Steve.
Yeah, everything turned out well and nobody did anything stupid.
But I'm just really pissed at Biden. He hasn't solved coronavirus yet.
And where's my $2,000?
Jesus Christ. He's the worst president since Obama.
I wish we had Trump again.
I know, me too.
So some fun trivia. Tony Blair recorded his part of the episode in April 2003. At first, David Beckham was originally going to be the guest star, but they thought that Beckham wasn't famous enough in America. Tony Blair is the first head of state or government official to guest on the show. And the first to hold any kind of government office to be the voice on a show. Almost every former president has been asked, but either declined and never responded. And the only other real notable politician to guest star on the show is a human walking joke, Rudolph Giuliani, who also people loved and now we all hate, rightfully so.
Right.
And he was in the episode Stop or My Dog Will Shoot from the 18th season.
I don't remember that.
I don't either.
So as they drive around England, Marge is impressed about how classy the country is. She says that every cab has its own butler, but in reality, it's just a dapper Brit who happens to be in the same cab when the Simpsons got in. And he was, of course, too polite to say anything. And at the same time, Jeeves is happy to pour some tea from a briefcase from the aloof American family.
The family arrives at the Buckingham Palace Motel, where they state to be a big shot tourist from everyone's favorite country, the USA. Homer claims that the U.S. saved England's ass in Vietnam and shared our prostitutes with Hugh Grant. So he wants some free maps with none of that dry British wit.
Oh, Homer.
Oh.
The American. I'm saying, you know, okay. Well, inside the motel room, Grandpa starts calling around to find his lost love, and the rest of the family take in the sights, and they run into one beloved author who doesn't know when to shut up. Hmm. So let's hear both of those interactions.
All right.
Did you spend an unforgettable night with a soldier from the U.S. Army in 1944? You did? Was he from the 1st Infantry Division? He was! And was he a gentle, caring lover? He was. Sorry I bothered you. I don't know if I'm ever going to find her.
Aw, Dad. I wish there was something I could do. Touch that minibar and you're dead!
Aw!
Look, it's J.K. Rowling, author of the Harry Potter books. You've turned a generation of kids onto reading.
Thank you, young muggle.
Can you tell me what happens at the end of the series?
He grows up and marries you. Is that what you want to hear?
Yes.
I really like the grandpa part with, you know, the, was he a sweet caring lover? Oh, no, it's not me. But yeah. Like, but when Homer leaves, like, just the threat to his own dad. And then J.K. Rowling. We've never talked about her on the podcast, have we?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure she's doing fine. Yeah, being quiet on social media and all that.
Yeah, I have nothing to say about her. I like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Nothing
it is,
ever.
It is kind of obvious, though, for both her and Tony Blair, how they were isolated in a room just reading their two lines.
Right. And now no one likes them.
Yeah.
At least Ian McKellen spores who comes up. We still love him.
That's right.
Is that it of the voices?
I not referenced, but the Queen of England is played by Jane Leaves from TV's Frasier.
Wait a minute, that wasn't the actual Queen?
Nope, sadly. She was recording an episode of The Family Guy that week.
All right. Is that the one where there's a flashback and the Queen's fighting a chicken and something like that?
It goes on for 15 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, great episode.
So the sightseeing tour continues as family hop on a double-decker bus that features ads for Ringo Starbucks, Big Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, and Springfield's favorite, Shakespeare's Fried Chicken. Yeah. But the bus driver takes the tour to another fast food locale, Judy Dench's Fish and Chips, where a British squeaky voice teen announces through the drive-thru that their food is now completely free of mad fish disease. Of course, a reference to mad cow disease, which is a disease that we are all afraid of that maybe hurt some people. Homer is unsure of getting fish as he's not much of a vegetarian, but the employee begs Homer to order or else Miss Dench will be enraged and beat the worker. The venerable actress is then heard over the intercom wailing on the teenage fishmonger.
Did you notice that the squeaky teen British version sounds a lot like Dobby from Harry Potter, speaking of Harry Potter?
Hey, you're right. I didn't think about that.
It just sounds
you're totally
just
right.
Like...
Please, Mr. Potter.
Right. I guess I love the idea of Judy Dench's fish and chips.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely go there.
Yep. God, fish and chips sounds good right now.
Always. So good. One of my favorites.
Next on their trip is the famous Harrods department store with a flashy neon sign that reads, "We make keys." Inside, Homer dons a bowler cap and brags to Marge that he has been on his best behavior. But Marge points out that he's punched out three people on the street, but he replies that the scuffle was over soccer results. As a couple talk, they walk by some suits of armor, a funny side gag of a life-size Prince Albert in a can. The much joked about tobacco, not the pierced penis, of course.
Of course.
Homer can't believe they gave Giggs a yellow card in the box, and Marge asks if he had any idea what he just said, and replies that he understood the word gave, unless that means something else in this country.
So Manchester United midfielder Ryan Giggs is mentioned. So he's a soccer player. So that's what they're talking about.
Footballer.
Footballer, yes. My apologies. So meanwhile, Bart and Lisa hit up the old candy shop. And the shop attendant warns that the children that the British candy is a bit sweeter than what they're accustomed to across the pond. Bart replies, "Look, teabag, fork over the brown." This is a fun line. And the children go on a candy bender to the tune of Iggy Pop's Lust for Life. And we get a fun homage to one of our favorite films, Trainspotting.
Bart and Lisa gorge on the candy and they munch on a gingerbread house. Run wild-eyed down the streets of London. They hop on a little canoe. They head down the Carnaby Street where they acquire some mod clothing. And they trip out on candy such as Spotto Chalk, Caramel Pasties, Bittersweeties, Oh Henry VIII, I like that one, and Chocolate Frogs, like in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Their sugar-filled trip reaches its end as Maggie crawls on the ceiling and her head turns 180 degrees and then back around again, much like the scene in Trainspotting.
Yeah, that was a fun thing. I like that a lot. I like that scene.
In Trainspotting?
That's the one scene that always horrifies me and bums me out. So Homer and Marge take to the London Eye, the famous Ferris wheel, to find Bart and Lisa. Marge is doubtful, but Homer has hope. He sees Big Ben, Piccadilly Circus, and then there's Jimmy Page, one of the greatest thieves of American black music who ever walked the earth. Oh, and there's the kids. Homer hits the eject button on the Ferris wheel, and it drops to the water as a pod, and it's a Bond reference.
Well, I think it's more of just the music.
Yeah.
How maybe everything would be spy-like, right?
Yeah.
I think that was the London Eye they were on.
Yes.
There was a movie, though. There was a Bond movie, Pierce Brosnan one. What Dreams May Come? No, what's it called? World Without a Cause. No.
The World Is Not Enough.
Yes, The World Is Not Enough, where there is an action sequence that takes place on the London Eye, but there is no fun little button. Also, there's another family in that capsule.
That's a that very goes good on, point.
That goes on the Simpsons adventure. And how is Homer maneuvering and driving that, by the way?
Yeah.
You know what I have to say about that?
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
And he did. John Swartzwelder never worked again.
That's right.
So coming up here, we get probably one of my favorite scenes. Bart and Lisa are recovering from their candy bender. And two dapper gentlemen in suits and top hats see them as filthy urchins in a reference to Trading Places coming up. Or maybe My Fair Lady. So they don't think that Bart and Lisa can be taught proper manners. And the second man bets one gold sovereign that he could do just that. The first man declares it's a bet, Lord Duffwager. And just then Homer rises and states they can't bet on his kids because this is America. Then Lord Duffwager assures his company that they'll find more wagers, to which the man replies that he loves Lord Duffwager. And the two men make out passionately.
It's so silly.
And it's not like homophobic or it's not harmful, because you know how like back in the other, you know, these times when the Simpsons would make like the gay scare joke or whatever.
Right, exactly.
But this was just, it was adorable.
Yeah, and I just love how hard they go at it. Yes, quite.
great scene.
I liked it a lot. Next on the tour of the sights is all of the classic stage shows to be seen in London. We have Urkel as Othello and Joe Millionaire in the Cherry Orchard, featuring another guest star, Joe Millionaire himself, Evan Marriott. Do we explain what Joe Millionaire was?
Was that actually Evan Marriott's voice?
It sure was.
Oh. So this episode kind of works without a lot of cultural references. I mean, maybe you don't know who Tony Blair is, but that's, you know, that's fine. But you'd have to look it up and be like, oh, Prime Minister, that's a big deal. Everyone knows who JK is. So maybe, but Joe Millionaire was like a weird, like, reality show, right when reality shows were kind of just coming out.
Yeah.
Because you had Survivor, but then you also had Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which was a game show. And then this was just like, okay, so Joe Millionaire was a reality show about a guy who was a millionaire who was trying to find a wife, much like how they do like Bachelor these days, but he actually wasn't a millionaire.
That was the whole hook of it, was that the women wanted to be with him because he was rich. And then it turned out that he's just like some farmer or something.
Yeah. And so this is definitely a Swartzwelder joke, because the joke was the line was the cherry orchard. And then he says, I don't have a cherry orchard, right? Like just a simple, quick joke. And Schwarzwelder, one of his only rules was that the stuff had to be funny and pretty short. So to him, like, a quintessential joke is that, like, you know, the cherry orchard. I don't have a cherry orchard. That's the joke.
Yeah, I like how tight it is because, I mean, I don't know that we needed to get Evan Marriott to be in this show.
No, you didn't need it.
But just the fact that they just got him in and got him out and just like, yep, that's yeah. It. So I feel like maybe there's pressure from Fox to kind of get him in the show or something because it was a Fox show.
Yeah, and I remember this episode being advertised more than the episode, because it was like, it's a star-studded event on this Sunday's episode of The Simpsons. We got J.K. Rowling, Tony Blair, Joe Millionaire, and the rest. R.I.P.
Yes. The rest happens to be Ian McKellen, who's in a small underground play that evidently has to do with Scotland or something.
You can say the play.
I don't want to say the play. It's bad luck.
All right. We're not actors, but Steve, should we play a clip?
Alrighty.
Sir Ian McKellen, you're my favorite Shakespearean actor.
Thank you, my dear. Please take these free tickets to my play.
What play?
We thespians believe it's bad luck to mention the name of this particular play out loud.
You mean Macbeth?
Quiet, you blundering fool! You'll curse us all!
What, by saying Macbeth?
Stop saying it!
Saying what?
Macbeth! Ah, now I've said it.
Oh, this is cool. Macbeth! Bart, stop saying Macbeth!
Mom, you said Macbeth!
Mr. Macbeth, I'm really sorry.
That's quite all right. You didn't know. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a performance to give.
Good luck!
It's bad luck to say that, too!
Silly scene, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, so in that, the first time they say Macbeth, a car drives by and splashes Ian McKellen. And then an anvil falls on him, on his foot. And then he's repeatedly struck by lightning. And then the Mac of Macbeth falls on him.
You could say he's a real Big Mac.
Hey!
Also, great performance by Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Sir Ian McKellen.
He's a like good actor for a reason.
Forgives the Simpsons. And then he comes out and he's like, oh, here's free tickets. I also love when Homer's like, Mr. Macbeth, I'm so sorry. I don't know. It's goofy.
I liked it.
Then the family goes to Ertz Rent-A-Car to rent a Mini Cooper. You can't say Ertz without being doing a British accent, Steve.
It's true.
I think I like that sign, Gaggage. And so Marge is impressed with Homer's ability to drive on the left side. She says that this is turning out to be the family's most enjoyable trip ever. And Homer comments how entirely uneventful this trip is when he subtly turns into a... But the family is repeatedly drives in circles, and Marge instructs Homer to turn. And Homer tries to exit through the opening, but Marge stops him, saying it's too risky. She wants to wait till the traffic thins out, so they turn yet again. Steve, I feel like I've seen this before.
Perhaps in National Lampoon's European Vacation?
Are you saying that the European Vacations did it first?
I think maybe. If we were to review Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, there were a couple references there to the Christmas, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Which they came out the same year.
Yeah, I think it was the number one box office movie at the time.
I don't know how you would know that, but
okay. I don't know.
You know what's so funny is about the roundabout is, I know they make that joke and maybe Americans might be afraid of it, but the roundabout is seriously like one of the best ways to have traffic flow.
Yeah, it's very efficient, and we here in Portland have several of them in our neighborhoods.
And I like it that way, baby.
Me too. I don't drive, but if I did, I would like it that way, baby.
Well, you drive your Porsche.
That's true. My roomy Porsche that has great gas mileage for being such a sporty vehicle.
And the chicks dig it. And the fellas, too.
Whatever you like. However you turn. Speaking of turning, the midday turns into early evening when Homer has had enough. He's going to act the way America acts best. Unilaterally, he hastily swerves through the traffic, breaking through the gates of Buckingham Palace and slamming into the gilded horse-drawn carriage, causing it to tip over on its side. Homer steps out of the car to assess the damage.
Okay, I'm going to go over there and see if they're cool. Okay, let's see. Oh, you can buff that out. You can buff that out. That's factory error. Oh, that thing's supposed to be on fire. Lady, please. Get back in your overturned car. Let the guys handle this.
We'll deal with him, Your Majesty.
Your Majesty?
Dad, you rear-ended the Queen of England.
The Queen of what?
Changing of the guard.
Wait! We have to exchange insurance! Oh! Ow! Oh!
What a silly scene.
It is a silly scene. And also, one of my favorite pieces of trivia from this episode is the plot of a Homer hitting the Queen was actually recycled from a spec script that Al Jean and Mike Reiss wrote about the Golden Girls, where Dorothy, played by Betty White.
R.I.P.
That's right. Crazy inauguration. Can't believe she showed up in Trump gear. I can't believe Joe Biden shot her himself. But Dorothy was in a collision with Mother Teresa in that one. It's really weird that they would, like, hey, remember that time Dorothy hit Mother Teresa? Let's reuse that. But Homer runs into the Queen of England.
That's fun. Well, Steve, our final act begins with one of your favorite things, spinning newspaper headlines.
Yeah.
And we get headlines such as...
The Times of London. Yank Bank's Queen. Old Bean.
The Mirror. Simpo to UK. I'll kill you all.
Oh, that was a good read. The Sun. Yankee Doodle Randy. Topless Homer on page 3.
So Homer's on trial charged with damaging the royal coach. You know what I call the royal coach?
What's that?
Lord Craig T. Nelson.
Oh, geez, I don't want to be British.
And then they would coach football, British style. Like Ted Lasso.
Yeah, there we go.
Now on Lord Coach.
I would love that.
Royal show. Coach. So we'll just take Ted Lasso scripts, which to be fair. Ted Lasso is just like a nice version of the movie Major League. That's all it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so back to The Simpsons here. So he's charged for putting dents in that royal coach. And he's asked how he pleads. And Harry replies, a vuzz away.
My lord, we Americans love queens, be they homecoming or dairy. This woman, however, is an imposter. Her luggage is inscribed H.R.H., which means her real name must be Henrietta R. Hippo.
Why did you let him be his own barrister?
What difference could it make? He hit the friggin' queen. I guess it's just too much for me to ask for one vacation where we don't go to jail or to a condo sales pitch.
Your Honor, I've completely disappointed my wife. That's punishment enough. You understand these things. You're a grandmother.
I'm a man.
Oh, and a very manly one, if I may say so, my lord.
I think my favorite part in that scene that we just played on TV is Marge.
Yeah.
She just wins everything just from that. Like, oh, what? You know, she just knows.
Yeah. Hit the freaking queen.
I really wish, like, they actually had Julie say she hit the fucking queen and they bleeped it.
They bleeped it out, yeah.
Good stuff.
So one quick cultural reference. Henrietta R. Hippo, which Homer assumes is, you know, instead of Her Royal Highness, is a character from New Zoo Review, a 70s children's TV show.
Well, I knew that, so.
Yeah, I know. I didn't want to bore you, but I just thought I'd mention it for those who didn't know about New Zoo Review.
It was Schwarzwelder's favorite program growing up when he was 24.
I like the way that the hippo talks. So the queen, in a jewel-encrusted neck brace, stands to speak. She talks about the difficulty of her life, witnessing the ravages of war, her family torn by tragedy. And while she was instantly making her way to the shop to buy some light bulbs, she's blindsided by a great lumbering brute.
Homer's impressed by the queen, saying that if she were 100 years younger and he were 100 years older, oh boy. But the queen has final say, and she calls to destroy Homer. As he's dragged away, he states that America rules! And that our Beatles are way better than England's precious Rolling Stones. And so we get some more spinning newspapers, such as...
The Sun. Judge goes medieval on Simpson's ass.
The Mirror. Wacko, Jacko, to Blimp Simpo. Sell me your bones.
And the Daily Mail. Bart and Prince Harry, out of control. Showing the former prince, and now Californian, and Bart drunkenly leaving a nightclub.
And don't forget, fellow podcaster.
That's true.
We then head to the Tower of London, as seen in King Ralph, where Homer has been locked up and put on display.
In this cell sits Homer Simpson, the most villainous blackguard to behold in this tower since Edward the Puppy Eater.
Look at his great staring eyes.
Like saucers they are.
He claimed he was me father, he did.
Bart, you're not helping.
Poke the monster with a stick. Tuppence a jab. Come on, cue up, lads.
Oh, Marge, I am so sorry. I should have listened to whatever it was you were saying.
It's partly my fault. I've been nagging you so much on this trip, you couldn't know which nags to focus on.
Well, Marge, if I die here, there's one thing I want you to remember. Don't buy any videotapes in England. They won't work in our VCR.
The same thing with DVDs these days, too.
It's true.
I never understood that. I was explained why that was.
Mm-hmm.
Just never understood it. Just like the metric system. I was like, fuck you guys.
Your weird logical system of based
as in like every other country in the world. And then there's us Americans.
Yep.
Metric system. And it's actually the metric system is pretty simple.
It is.
And more logical.
Yeah.
It's like gauging temperatures too. Like Celsius makes more sense.
Yeah. 0 is freezing. 100 is boiling. Like, wow. How about that? Instead of 32 and 212.
We suck.
Yeah, we're awful.
President Biden, what do you think of the metric system?
That's a bunch of malarkey, Jack.
Whoa. Here's my biggest issue with the presidency right now, Steve.
Sure.
We have a vice president who's like 56 or whatever, wearing Chuck Taylors.
Oh, man.
She's 50-something. How do you walk around in those things?
I don't know. Honestly, I can't. It hurts so much.
It's, don't it?
It's, don't it?
Back to the Simpsons. Hey, Homer prays to the God of England to let him go. In return, he'll spell color with a U, and he'll use the metric system with every cubic millimeter of blood in his... he can't do it, Steve. It's all just so stupid. But then he hears his family call out from outside the cell.
They found a secret tunnel used by Sir Walter Raleigh, but Homer's unsure, worried that he'll even get in more trouble. But as Marge points out, couldn't possibly be in more trouble. They plan on putting his head on a pike.
So we see two guards practicing head piking with melons. Is that a profession, head piking?
I think so, yeah.
Well, one of the guards instructs the other to smash a melon on and to let the pike do all the work. And Homer's ready to escape, so he asks Lisa for the instructions.
Okay, what do I do?
Push the gray brick in the back of the fireplace.
Sweet freedom, here I am!
Put out the fire first.
Boy, it's a good thing I'm leaving before I went nuts. Goodbye, sparkly elves.
Goodbye.
Oh, my God. We've made a terrible mistake. This tunnel comes out in the worst possible place.
An elephant's butt?
Yes, Bart, an elephant's butt.
Boy, a Krispy Kreme would really clean up down here.
I mean, an elephant's butt is kind of scary.
It is. Much like in the previous clip, Marge won all the prizes. Lisa gets all the prizes in this one because I love how she's so frustrated with Homer because he puts his hand through the fire. And then her just really, her reading of, yeah, an elephant's butt, Bart. Her family's dumb.
It's like how like maybe like Schwartz Welder feels about this time current Simpsons, like making stupid jokes. Like, yeah, do that stupid joke. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. It could be like, yeah, you're going to talk about an elephant's butt.
Right. Good stuff.
So Homer opens a door, which is on the other side of a painting, and he walks into not an elephant's butt, but a place fit for a duke or even an earl or perhaps a queen. That's right. The queen of England. What? Not the king of Queens. Walks into her bedroom chambers holding quite a large sandwich. When she sees Homer, she grasps and blows the whistle around her neck, alerting the guards.
Is it weird that there's the... a door from the queen's chambers to the cell in the tower?
It is, but I don't know the story of Sir Walter Raleigh. Maybe he and the queen were like knocking boots while he was locked up.
Yeah, maybe. Well, the guards who enjoy some tea time jump into action, praising the whistle, and they grab a Homer by the arms as he makes a final plea. As they leave the country, Abe makes his final discovery.
Please, Your Majesty, I know that I, like many other Americans, have behaved like a total buffoon. But we Americans are England's children. I know we don't call as often as we should, and we aren't as well behaved as our goody two-shoes brother Canada, who, by the way, has never had a girlfriend. I'm just saying. But please, find it in your jewel-encrusted heart to forgive me.
That was very sweet of the Queen, letting you go in exchange for taking Madonna back to America.
Oh, I'm telling you, I'm English.
English women don't pump gas naked.
See you in Atlanta, jerk.
Abe Simpson, are you leaving again without saying goodbye?
It
Edwina! You got my message! Oh, sorry, I never saw you again. I just felt the cultural differences between us were too great. Plus, as the boat pulled away from the dock, I thought you looked fat.
You don't have to apologize, Abe. You Yanks saved our bacon.
Bacon.
Abe, this is my daughter, Abby. She's 58 this month.
58? Well, 59 years ago, your mother and I were gotta go. See you in heaven.
Mommy, he's everything you said he was.
Lady, you're gorgeous. You make Dame Edna look like a dude.
Why, thank you. You're all right, love.
That's a long clip there.
I know, but it just wrapped up everything so nicely. Because, you know, Queen forgived Homer. He called Canada gay.
That sounded like a Schwarzwelder joke.
It very much did, yeah.
Wonder why.
And then, you know, we had Madonna in a duffel bag.
I'm not here to say what's attractive or not. I mean, we're all attracted to whatever, but I don't think Homer's sister's that attractive.
Yeah. It's also weird to be like, hey, it's your half-sister. Man, you're attractive.
I'd like to see her back on the show.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. That's the show.
Yep. It's kind of fun because he says that you make Dame Edna look like a dude. And Dame Edna is a dude.
Right.
But yeah, that's our episode. And so we should take a break and then we'll come back. We'll have some tea, some crumpets, and then we'll talk about the Regina monologues.
That's good because I really got to use Lou.
All right. Skip to it. We'll be right back.
And we're back. Steve, let's wrap up the Regina monologues with some of our favorite quotes, some visual gags, and our review. Oh, maybe a t-shirt or tattoo.
Sounds great, Governor.
Right. We like to start off with the fun stuff, like a t-shirt. How about that?
All righty. So I have two, both from the early scenes in the episode.
Early days.
One is actually a t-shirt. It says, I saw $1,000.
Because that'd be easy to make.
Yeah. And it'd just be funny to be like, cool, man. You saw $1,000.
It almost would sound like... people would be like, is this like a stimulus joke, man?
Or... Yeah, I know.
But it is pretty good.
Yeah. And then my second one, it's just R2-D2 playing the bass.
That'd be a great tattoo.
Yeah, exactly.
I want a logo shirt, maybe a polo with an embroidered logo of the business of Dame Judi Dench's Fish and Chips.
Ooh, I like that a lot.
I think that'd be a great, be a fun shirt. How about quotes or scenes?
So for me, I think that there's a lot of like individual performances by characters. Mo was very funny in the scene with it's got to be somebody famous. Let's say Hitler.
Yeah.
And then following that up with Snake being like, oh, so sorry. I like that. I really liked Lisa's frustration with both Homer and Bart. And then, you know, you mentioned the line about Marge being like, it's a freaking Queen of England.
Yeah.
Even in the beginning with Burns and Smithers, guide me in.
Yeah.
This is a subtle joke. I like that.
There's
a lot.
A couple of, I'm doing air quotes, gay jokes in this episode.
There are, yeah.
They're not problematic.
No, I don't think so. I think they're just all in good jest.
The guide me in is great. And then also the trading places, aka the My Fair Lady to Dapper British Men making out.
Yeah.
I guess maybe the one that's a little problematic is Homer calling Canada gay at the end. But it's all in good fun. Maybe he was using the term gay, what we would say in the 50s. Is that Canada's happy.
Exactly. What were some of your favorite quotes?
Everything that you hit was definitely my favorite parts too. I think I said it in the episode too, was the British gents.
Mm-hmm.
That whole scene it's funny. I'm not laughing at that act. It's just they're so proper and they're enjoying it. So good. Yes.
Quite. And the fact that his name is Lord Daftwager is
really
fun.
It's such a silly name. You know, this episode, it's not really an episode. It's an event. It's a spectacle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
So trying to review it, it doesn't further like a canon piece for The Simpsons. You know, maybe it kind of does because we established that Grandpa has an illegitimate child.
And also, I didn't mention this in the show talk, but I really enjoyed the fact that it seems obvious, but the fact that he had a flying hellfish patch was really a nice touch.
So there's some nice callbacks. I think it is just like, they're like, okay, well, the Simpsons need to go to England. How do we get there? And they're just like, just have John Swartzwelder do it. He's made them go to Florida, made them go to Africa. People love those episodes. So they're, it's his time to take this. And and maybe this is the episode that broke him. He's like, ah, fuck it, I can't do this anymore. It's listening to like a compilation album, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like there's some great jokes. Exactly. Like in the beginning with Burns and Smithers. Love that. Marge and Lisa have great, like, you guys are idiot type of jokes. Homer being a doofus. Yeah. We're watching like a remix or something, like her best. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's just a compilation of, you put it really well. Cause it's just, there isn't really a plot. I mean, the thing with Homer hitting the Queen of England happens like 14 minutes in.
Yeah.
And it's just a series of sketches almost of just like joke, 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 joke.
But that's also kind of the same way too. It's how they, I mean, even Australia, when they go to Australia, which is one of the great episodes, but it's the same thing. They just point out like, hey, they're not American. So they're funny because they do this and they say this.
Right.
That's all
we're
it.
Dumb Americans for, this is how we're wrong as Americans because this is how other countries perceive us properly.
And I think that's how these episodes do kind of work. Where the Brazil episode, which of course we haven't reviewed yet proper on this podcast, it plays off of too many negative stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember, it has been like 2 years since we've watched that episode, or since I've watched the episode.
Yeah.
And the Simpsons Safari, which, yeah, I think is a little bit better than the Brazil episode.
But it is too, playing on the stereotypes of them rather than the way that Americans are,
right,
you know, perceived in other countries.
And it's kind of interesting, back to back from last week's episode, if you haven't listened to, is the saga of Carl, where instead of the family, it's just Homer, Moe, Lenny and Carl go to Iceland. You know, this episode is one that I've probably watched multiple times in the past. I don't hate it, and I do love John Swartzwelder, but obviously it's not his best.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just would watch this episode again just for those certain like 7-8 sight gags. It flows pretty fast too. That's another good thing about this episode.
Definitely.
If I were to give it a ranking, I think you said earlier in the episode that you said that Mr. Burns was putting his pin and it was his age, and you said he was 104.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give this a 77 out of 104.
That's like almost 77%.
74, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That's a C.
Yeah, that's solid. You're right. This is definitely a spectacle of an episode, like a watching event. It feels very like... You mentioned the commercials, and that's what I think about when I think about this episode, is the ads building up to it about how it was a big event episode. Like, they got Tony Blair, they got Ian McKellen, they got J.K. Rowling, and they even have Jill Millionaire. That doesn't appeal to me. What appeals to me is the silliness of the episode and just all of the funny. That's what I like about this episode the most, is just all the jokes and how, like you said, fast-paced it was. So yeah, it's not the best episode. It's hard not to compare it to the Australia episode because it's very similar, where this time Homer instead of Bart upsets the nation.
Yeah.
And has to deal with the punishment. It's still a fun episode. So I'm going to say that, you know, there are 650 members of Parliament, not counting Bootsy Collins. And of those 650 members, I'm going to give this a 400.
See, that puts you at a 61%.
I'll say 420.
Hey. Then I'll give mine a 69.
Nice.
Which raises your score and lowers mine. But we're not here about ranks.
Yeah.
We're not an animated studio, ranks and bass. Hate that joke. I think it's a nice palate cleanser.
It's a good point. Like, if you're watching like a very emotional episode, like the one with Homer's mom, or like something sad, it'd be nice to...
like Jurassic Bark from Futurama?
Exactly. This would be a nice one to do after that to kind of like lighten the mood.
After you watch This Is Us, watch this episode. There you go.
There you go.
All right. Well, after you watch This Is Us, then you watch this. Watch what we're going to watch next week.
Yeah, but to do that, we're going to need the Wheel of Random. All right, let's give that a spin to see what season we're in. Ba-doop.
We have season 24.
Season 24. All right, let's spin it again to see what episode we're watching. Ba-doop.
Woohoo! We have episode 12.
Season 24, episode 12. Why, that's Love is a Many Splintered Thing. What happens in that, Craig?
Well, based on the title, I'm going to assume it's a crossover with the Turtles and Master Splinter's in it.
Awesome. Sounds like fun.
Well, originally aired February 10th, 2013. I'm going to assume this must have been a Valentine's episode.
I would track, yeah.
We should have saved this episode for Valentine's week, but we're not going to. So we do what the wheel says. The story goes like this, Steve. Bart's heartstrings are pulled once again when Mary Spuckler returns to Springfield. However, his failure to pay her enough attention strains their relationship. Marge, too, puts Homer in the doghouse.
Oh, boy.
So Mary Spuckler must have been Cletus's daughter?
Yep, I believe her full name is Mary WrestleMania Spuckler.
Is this like a sequel episode, apparently? I don't know.
Sounds like it is. I feel like I remember hearing about he and Mary hooking up at some point.
Usually I remember episodes. I don't remember this one.
Yeah, I don't really know.
All right. Written by Tim Long. We've done many episodes that he has penned.
It's true.
All right. Well, Steve, I'm looking forward to watching Love is a Mini Splinter Thing with you next week.
Me too.
All right. Well, you can go ahead and go to our merch store, which is at tpublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys, and contact us on social medias of Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Parler.
I think we're off of Parler now.
Oh, man. I don't know what happened there.
I don't know.
There we are at 138 Simpsons.
And you can go to your favorite podcatching app and leave us a review, or you can email us at 138simpsons@gmail.com. If you want to leave us a review, feel free. Leave us 5 stars, but you don't have to write a real review. Just write what kind of fish you like in your fish and chips.
Hey, also, use those 5-star reviews to ask us a question. Maybe we'll read it on the air.
Yeah, and I haven't said this in a while, but thank you for listening, and tell a friend.
Yeah, or a colleague.
Yeah, or a complete stranger.
We prefer the strangers because it's a funny conversation.
It is.
But make sure you're wearing a mask when you confront them.
Always wear a mask.
That's right. All right. Well, for this week, I've been half annoyed grunt boy Craig.
And I've been your other half annoyed grunt boy Steve.
And remember, keep watching the skis.
Turn, 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 and turn some more.
I love you, Lord Daft Ranger.
Yes, and I you. Yes, quite.